Hello guys, it's me, Corval here. Today's show would not be possible without our sponsor, Shimmer Network. Just as a reminder, Shimmer is a DAG-based feeless layer 1 network that's both fast and highly scalable. You can learn more about them at shimmer.network.
Let's get after it. Welcome to the very first, we're going to call this the Shimmer Community Spaces, hosted by Blockbytes. So this is an anything goes type of space. It's not a fluff sesh. It's not a, it's none of that shit. It is, we want the community to come up and actually like talk about like what you're experiencing, what you're feeling. We're going to talk about the tech. We're going to talk about what's coming. Obviously there's like so much bullish, you know, stuff on the way. But I also know, as I get to know like the IOTA community more and more, that there is a hesitation there. And there is like a, man, I really want to see this come about before I, you know, jump in with both feet. So the goal here is like, anyone listening, we want you to come up. If you have a question, like throw your hands up. We'll bring you up here. We're going to just be trying to yank in as many people as possible to get like a really good discussion going. We have some, like we've prepared, you know, some, I don't know, what'd you call them, Mikey? Prompts, topics in the background, like some shit just to kind of get us talking. And you know, we'll go from there, and hopefully like maybe this is something we'll continue to do indefinitely. I don't know, I like kind of the spaces format, but we're going to be doing, when EVM goes live, we're going to be launching, you know, Shimmer Live, which is going to be our weekly live show that we do on the Blockbytes YouTube. That's going to be myself, it's going to be Dracula Presley as one of our co-hosts. We'll probably be bringing some random people in from the community to like help co-host it, but essentially we're going to be going over all of the news from the Shimmer ecosystem from like the week prior, whether that's like new releases from DeFi projects, whether it's like hot gossip, whether it's, you know, God forbid, you know, bad shit that happens, because it does, especially as the network grows. It's not all going to be unicorn farts and rainbows, but yeah, so hopefully like in the meantime this can be a good, you know, stopgap for that. So we have Mikey as one of the co-hosts. He is on the Blockbytes core team. We have JD Sutton from the community JD, how do I phrase it exactly? It's community treasury, but it's like the Shimmer community treasury, or how do you, what would you call that?
I get confused, and I think we're going with the Tangle community treasury.
Tangle, right? All right, awesome. The TCT. All right, good deal. And then we have Austin Bandeloff from the Touchpoint program with IOTA. Austin, thank you for joining us, my friend.
Absolutely.
Glad to have you here. Cappy from Nakama, one of the, you know, premier development venture teams that is building on top of Shimmer. They've got Deeper Finance, Accumulator. I know a whole bunch of other stuff under the surface. So Cappy, thanks for being here, my friend. Always a pleasure.
Hey guys, thanks.
And Dracula Presley, York, do you want to like, so I know a lot of people know you because you were doing the Flippin' Burger stuff, and you've been around just kind of the scene for a long time, but do you want to like tell us, give people a little TLDR on you?
Sure. I've just been a builder in general in crypto for a few years now. I've done projects mostly on Phantom, but also on AVAX, Adara, Ethereum, a couple other things. But yeah, I have ties from way back when to the IOTA community. I was an early holder, and I've just been like very involved with Shimmer. Basically, like I've been developing a project Accumulator with Nakama. And very excited for Shimmer. And that's how I kind of ended up doing Flippin' Burgers, was just some of those ties with some IOTA folks. And excited to do these spaces and chat with everyone. And we'll be doing Shimmer Live soon, so that's going to be awesome. But in general, just a guy that builds things and shit posts on Twitter. So.
Awesome. Awesome, man. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. All right. Let's kick us off. So Dave from the IOTA Foundation put an update on the Shimmer EVM progress recently. If you haven't seen it, it's in the IOTA Discord. If you go to Tech Announcements, it's the last one from July the 13th. And he said, so here's another update on the Shimmer EVM progress. 2 weeks ago, we reset the Shimmer EVM testnet. And for, you know, I'm sure you guys remember we had the Treasures of Shimmer campaign, which was back in May. I think kind of the assumption from a lot of folks was we were going to go through this testnet campaign, discover a couple bugs, redeploy a version, and then hopefully we were going to move on to mainnet soon thereafter. I think we're probably pushing around 60 days right now since the Treasures of Shimmer campaign. And he says, so we reset the Shimmer EVM testnet with the last non-upgradable release we plan to do before the launch on Shimmer. Thanks to all your feedback, we were able to identify some new issues that were not resolved with this release, such as nonce desynchronization and some issues with our new archive node functionality, which I had heard maybe like a memory leak or something in that area. Most of these issues have now been resolved and are already deployed on the testnet. So we're wrapping up a few more fixes and improvements based on follow-up feedback before we invite several projects to redeploy and conduct another testing round, reporting back to us if they're satisfied with how the chain works. And if this is the case, we will move forward with deployment on Shimmer. And so before I go on to, well, actually, you know what, I'm going to read the rest of it and then we'll kick it over to you guys. So together with the Block Scout team, we're also working on the publicly hosted version of the Block Scout Block Explorer, making additional improvements to the node software based on their feedback to work towards a smooth and stable Explorer experience, which is obviously crucial. And in parallel to this, we've also started working on the deliverables for after the Shimmer EVM launch, aiming to improve the developer experience with magic contracts and advanced congestion control. We know that you're all eager to get this going on Shimmer, and so are we once all major stakeholders are happy, which I'm interested to know what that actually means. But once all major stakeholders are happy with the current state, we should reach our goal sooner rather than later. So, all right, so we've done a few of these redeployments, to my understanding, of the Shimmer testnet at this point. And I think, so I went and checked, you know, Deeper and TangleSwap and ShimmerScene. It doesn't look like anyone is publicly redeployed on the testnet yet, this version of the testnet. Can anyone that's, like, familiar with what's going on here jump in?
Maybe I can, because it's Rob from the Karma here. So we've redeployed Deeper onto the testnet, and we're currently testing it now to make sure it's stable enough to release onto public. We found like a couple of like minor issues that we've reported back to Dave that I know that he's working on. But yeah, we're hopeful over the next week that we'll be able to allow that testnet version to be public again, and then we can start testing, get the users testing Deeper again, and then I'll work with Dracula as well to redeploy Accumulator over the near future as well, and then we can get the user base testing that. I think most of the developers, if not all of the developers, have got access to that testnet now, so I'd employ everyone to kind of jump in now and look to redeploy, so we can kind of iron out any minor issues that we've got now, ready for the mainnet release, because my understanding is that this version of the testnet, if it's you know, stable and working as we hope that it will do, then it's just a case of essentially like flicking the switch, and then rather than redeploying another chain, they can essentially just call this testnet the mainnet once everybody's happy that it's running correctly and is stable. I'm sure it's going to take a bit of time to get there. I don't want to build up everyone's hopes and think, you know, in a couple of weeks we'll be going on to mainnet, because that won't be the case, because even after we, you know, go public again with the testnet applications, there needs to be a period of time of stability, and for us to see that the chain is running with good stability over a good few weeks at very least. I think we're looking at least 6 weeks out from my perspective, but yeah, I mean, the IOTA Foundation might have other plans here. But yeah, that's just a quick update from the comments side.
Yeah, sorry, awesome.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Drek.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, Accumulator has not redeployed on the new testnet, but what I can say on the first deployment was overall, I know everyone's saying when. It's been a long process. But I will say the first testnet, you know, overall, there was nothing, you know, breaking the chain. There was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of positives on this first test night. It was a very solid deployment. And I think that, you know, that's like a very positive thing. A lot of times, you know, these things launch and then like almost immediately you find, oh, okay, well, now that people are using it, it can't handle the stress, or, you know, the chain just breaks. So I think this next deployment, they feel really confident that they have squashed pretty much any bugs. We're excited to redeploy on it to test it out some more. But yeah, I mean, I think all in all, they've done like a really good job. They've just been very thorough, taking their time. And I know that sometimes that makes people like, oh, like we've been waiting for so long. But I think, you know, we're looking at what will be like a very solid launch.
And I'm curious, and by the way, for anyone, you know, again, I had mentioned earlier, I know that it seems like that there's a lot of delays, but like from my perspective, thank God, man. What if we had deployed, you know, 4 months ago with multi-chain being like a crucial infrastructure for us? And, you know, then just like first week on the job caught up in all that shit, that would have been terrible. But does anyone know, like, what were the things that were discovered from the testnet campaign or the most recent testnet that kind of like had to be spliced?
Oh, well, I was going to let, I thought Cappy was about to talk, but from what I remember correctly, a lot of it just had to do with information, basically. Like, you know, there were like things kind of running behind in terms of being validated. And because, for instance, like there was a lot of like price stuff fluctuating because, you know, you didn't have like your main oracles totally, you know, running quite yet. So then when the transactions were running behind, at least on accumulator, we were seeing things like kind of like balances displaying incorrectly and that sort of thing. And on the technical side, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it had something to do with, you know, Shimmer communicating with the IOTA network directly. But this was like in a very extreme circumstance. I mean, this was when we were having, you know, there was at least one day where there was a million TXs on the testnet, which is insane. So like I said, all in all, it's still a positive thing because, you know, what happens, I mean, I can attest from Phantom Network, especially during the bull run, we would have these days where, you know, the network was just crazy overloaded and nothing's working and gas is like, you know, insanely high.
Yep.
And I think that's like a kind of what I was saying about how overall the testnet was positive was because even with that kind of stress on the network was still functioning and it was still working. You know, you were just kind of having some like lag issues. So they've addressed that. That's the main issue that I know about. Like I said, anyone chime in if you know anything else, but to me, that was actually like very good news. I mean, a million TXs in one day is, you know, that's in competition with pretty much any of the major L2s. I mean, anything. So if the network can handle that, that's very promising.
Yeah, just to add to that as well, the reason why it's a very unusual situation to have like a million transactions in a day is that we had this incentivized testnet campaign with the Choices of Shimmer campaign, where there were economic incentives to come in and battle test the network. And by God, did it get battle tested. It got an insane amount of transactions. We saw like some manipulation with bot activity on the chain. But it really allowed the team to see how the chain would work under like battle tested scenarios. And on the back of that, the IEF team have been working on an advanced congestion control, because as most of you are aware, the order consensus on Shimmer EVM is randomized. And so everyone pays the same fee. But one of the difficulties with that is when there's a lot of congestion, it doesn't allow you to prioritize your transactions. And for DeFi applications, that can become problematic. So they are looking at implementing a new congestion control, which is, I presume, out of the testing that went on the previous chain and Treasures of Shimmer. I think that congestion at time kind of, it did ruin some of the user experience, which isn't present in the current chain. And really, that is such an extreme scenario where you have an incentivized testnet, but you have zero fee transactions. So anyone can deploy a bot and look to manipulate those financial incentives for their own benefit. When the mainnet goes live, there will be a mechanism to obviously dissuade that, and that there'll be fees for each of the transactions. So there won't be that incentive to be spamming the network. And if someone does look to spam the network, it increasingly gets more expensive, because my understanding is that the fees that you pay per transaction will increase as the congestion on the network reaches its peak level. So we shouldn't see that kind of congestion on mainnet, at least early on. Hopefully we'll see some of that congestion more naturally over time.
Cappy, can I get you to expand on something real quick for me? Because this is the first time I've heard it put in that way. So are you saying that gas is not auctioned on the Shimmer EVM in the way that we would expect it to be on, you know, almost every other EVM, you know, layer one, at least, deployment out there? Can you expand on that just a little bit?
Yeah, it's one of the niches and unique selling points of Shimmer EVM is that the order consensus is randomized. And there's lots of advantages to that. One is that it's a more fairer economic model. So everyone pays the same gas. And basically, as the network gets busier, the gas fees increase. But you can't, you can't increase your gas fee to get priority within the order queue, within the consensus. That also ensures that there's no MEV, which is a maximum extractable value on chain. So you can't get people like attacking your DEX trades with things like front running and sandwich attacks. That's a little complicated maybe for this audience to understand, but essentially it's a more fairer method for ensuring that transactions are ordered randomly. One of the disadvantages though of that is that if I have a transaction that has to be put through as soon as possible, let's say, like, for example, for Deepa, like we've got liquidation bots on Deepa, and we have to ensure that those transactions go through as soon as possible to ensure that there's no bad debt on the protocol, we are at risk of potentially during a really busy period of that transaction not going through without some form of advanced congestion control, which is what Dave's working on with the smart contract team right now to make sure that, you know, we can prioritize certain transactions without kind of minimizing the advantages of randomized order consensus. I don't know if that explains it any better.
Made sense to me. And I appreciate you breaking that down. So I knew about, you know, the randomized ordering and, you know, the inability for MEV, but I didn't, in my head, that didn't translate to gas not being auctioned like it is on pretty much every other network. And for anyone that doesn't understand what that means, if you go to, like, you know, Ethereum, you're going to get, you know, market value for gas, aggressive or low, depending on how quickly you want your transaction to go through. And that's because the higher transaction, you know, the higher gas cost you put, the quicker that it's going to be picked up by the nodes or by the miners. And in this particular case, what we're saying is that's not really something that has been on the network, but maybe it is something are you saying that that's something that's going to be added, or there's going to be, like, at least a way to push it through in emergency situations, Cappy?
Yeah, I don't know exactly how they're planning to do this, but during emergency situations, we should be able to push through, like, high priority transactions. But that you won't be able to guarantee exactly where it is within the queue in that block, but you should be able to guarantee that it's got a really high chance of being in that block.
Mm-hmm. Okay, excellent. That makes sense. And for anyone that just came in, you know, again, questions, comments, you want to chat, you want to be a part of this, throw your hand up, man. I'll bring you guys up here. If I recognize you, I might invite you to speak. Ignore it if you don't want to, but if you'd like to be a part of what we're doing, please feel free to accept it. JD Austin, I want to kick something over to you because you guys haven't gotten you in the conversation yet here. So, you know, you guys kind of both work, you know, with the Tangle Community Treasury and Touchpoint. I would kind of put you guys into, like, the builder support realm of Shimmer and what's going to be happening. Like, what's the sentiment been among projects and builders, and how's all that been going?
Go ahead, JD. You can start.
Let's say the Treasury had a plan to hopefully be fully live and hopefully see kind of EVM by, let's say, mid-end July. and, you know, again, that's delays. But like you said, I mean, blessed that we didn't launch and then be solely based on multi-chain. And that actually gave the Treasury to start looking at you know, different sort of, you know, is there any way that we as a Treasury can support by maybe supporting a project that has other bridge integrations so that we're not really relying on a single one. And it kind of brings me back to the days of, I remember when, I forget who it was. I think Celsius was going to list IOTA. And for so long, you know, the community hasn't been able to really participate in Web 2 or Web 3 sort of yield platforms. And Celsius was going to be kind of the first custody where you can drop your IOTA and get a yield on it. And I remember asking, you know, kind of in general and whatnot, you know, well, how solid is Celsius? Is there a possibility that it can sort of go bankrupt and you lose your money? And people were like, absolutely not. They're backed by Three Arrows. They're like the biggest multi-billion dollar, you know, companies and traditional kind of in this. It can't happen. They're the number one, literally. Sure enough. and I praise, you know, the Lord that it never went through, that IOTA was actually listed, because I probably would have lost a lot of money. So I think in this similar instance, you know, there was a good instance that we had a bit of delay there, and all the better that when it comes out, it just comes out solid. Saying that, you know, one of the things that really the Treasury needs is a multi-sig, which Sevrox is working on, and that will be basically a Gnosis fork there, so that we can do multi-sig transactions. And then, you know, I know the DeFi exchanges are even allowing that. So basically, let's say organizations or other treasuries from outside the system could come in and participate in getting yield by having a multi-sig, and that's huge. But we need EVM to launch so that we can move the treasury funds in. So right now we're kind of just really tightening things up. And I think people have said that. We saw a really big explosion of grants coming in, which was awesome. But I think the sentiment has changed a little bit of just, we're just kind of tightening things up to, we really just want to wait till EVM launches. So we have that multi-sig, we have kind of full control over the treasury. And yeah, we're just kind of holding back right now, as well as, you know, focusing to support the DeFi kind of snowball effect takeoff. But one thing I know is that everyone is just like frothing at the mouth. You know, this is like the last 10 yards. It's always the toughest to get through before things launch. And, you know, some people have said, you know, well, what's plan B if EVM doesn't launch? I said, well, I'm pretty sure EVM is going to launch. It's one thing. You know, things take time, but they always do generally launch, and we're in that stage. So we're just in that little waiting period before the excitement really comes.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, from the Touchpoint side, I think that most teams, I mean, as JD said, I think people are frothing at the mouth. They're ready to launch. They're tightening up right now. Obviously there's this waiting period, but you know, the one point that you made about multi-chain, it's spot on. And Celsius, I mean, it's kind of a double-edged sword where, you know, a lot of teams are ready to go, the community is ready to go, but, you know, if you launch too early, whether that's timing in the market or with infrastructure partners that, you know, aren't as sound as they are expected to be, like multi-chain, it's, you know, it's here because of the brand, it's here because the longevity of it, but, you know, the reality of it was multi-chain was not the partner we wanted or needed to launch with. And so I think like right now, the way that we're thinking is, and a lot of the projects inside of Touchpoint are discussing how, you know, what kind of infrastructure partners we need, whether it's Oracles or an additional bridge. And yeah, I think that the main focus for everyone is to obviously get things done as soon as possible. But like Cappy said, there's certain minor issues, even on this latest round of the testnet, that need to be kind of resolved before we can actually, you know, have everyone launch publicly and launch the mainnet of Shimmer EVM. But, you know, for the most part, I think sentiment's pretty high. I think everyone knows that it is right around the corner. And I know we say that a lot, but at this point, you know, there is really no doubt that the Shimmer EVM is launching. And yeah, I mean, I'd say that there's a lot more interest than there's ever been in terms of attracting people from outside. And yeah, you know, we have our core group of projects that are building their essentially ready to go. And I think once these minor issues have kind of figured themselves out, we'll be on a good path.
Just to add, really,
go ahead, Gabby.
Sorry, just to add a couple of points really quick. On the on the point of the multi-chain bridge, I'll give the foundation a lot of credit in that when there was some initial drama with multi-chain, probably going back probably 4, maybe 6 weeks now, time flies in crypto, they quickly kind of pivoted away from multi-chain. And they've been looking at other options since then. So like this isn't going to be like a knee-jerk reaction from the foundation looking for another bridge, because they've already started that transition of looking for other infrastructure partners to support Shimmer EVM, which is good to see. And they've made really good traction there. Second point, I just want to reiterate, just to agree with you in that there is so much pent up, development ready to launch onto Shimmer EVM. I've not seen another chain with this amount of development activity prior to the chain launching. Yes, it's disappointing that, you know, we don't have the chain live today. But what I can say is that there's a lot of pent-up supply of development there ready to launch. And even within the Karma, we've had additional time now to be, researching and developing additional applications, which we've yet to even announce. There's three projects that we're currently in sort of latter stage development, which we haven't even announced yet, which is going to be really exciting, that we'll come onto Shimmer EVM as well. So we're really excited for the future. We still believe that Shimmer has a really good position in the Web3 ecosystem space. It has a lot of niches which other EVM chains don't have. And so, yeah, we're still super excited, and I can relate to people's frustrations with the delays. You know, we ourselves have some of those frustrations, but what I would say is be patient. Like, we want to be working on something that is solid and secure and stable. The worst thing that could occur is for us to rush this and then for us to have issues on a live environment and people being, economically impacted because of that.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent point. Go ahead, guys.
Yeah, I'd say too, like, I've been talking a lot with a couple DeFi platforms, and they just reiterate, two things. One is how important the launch is, like how important to get it right. And that's something, and one of the biggest needs there are liquidity, and that's something we're providing. But it almost like the delay is not even a factor, because really what they talk about is the snowball effect, that, once EVM goes live, that there's definitely such a big focus on DeFi. And when you look at those DeFi other protocols that have done it well, and that snowball effect kind of takes off, and then the TVL comes, and then the yield is there, and if the liquidity is there, then the constant yield is there, and the mercenaries come and go. But to keep it going after that, that if that snowball effect takes off, then just applications come, people come, the TVL grows, and of course the token, has an effect as a price increase. Now, if you don't get that right, like as, let's say some, big network crash or something like that, or some, hack, then that snowball effect could be shot right down, which of course is going to have an effect on the price. So clearly this is the big shot. This is everything in my mind over the last 5 years has really come to this. In some ways, I think, this is just as important as, IOTA 2.0 and removing the coordinator. It's just having solid smart contract EVM and a network that can scale, and especially that can, offer something a little different to where that, you don't have to deal with the max extractable value, and that then the users don't get negatively affected with something like that, since this network is protecting that. And then the other thing that, I've heard too from the builders is like how impressive it was during the campaign, in the sense that, not only was it that, you could just go and get tokens for free. So essentially there was absolutely no mitigation to prevent spam whatsoever. And not only that there wasn't any mitigation, there was actually an incentive to spam the network. So it was like, all these decentralized platforms are all set up to prevent spamming it, to prevent, taking down the network, because that's ultimately what happens. And during that campaign, it was incentivized to do that. And though definitely there was definitely some bugs found and whatever, but it was able to keep going. And like, how impressive in that. So now think of that network that has low fees, EVM, supports something different to counteract MEV and protect users, And then Al as well will have these small fees and mitigation to prevent the bots, prevent the spamming. And, you know, it's not just, I think some protocols might want to rush something and say, oh, it's good enough. You know, we're going to have fees in place. Let's go with it. But, you know, again, the IOTA Foundation, the builders, you know, even the community supportive developers that are building apps, they're always looking bigger. They're always looking like, no, we want to build something that's going to scale globally. We're not, you know, this isn't just we want to get this out. We want to get this out and we want it solid and we want it right, you know, because eventually this is even going to go to IOTA mainnet. And now we're supporting global scaled, you know, operations. It's like not even DeFi at that point. It's the totally next level after that, which we haven't seen really anyone using in crypto. So, you know, it's definitely, for me being here 5 years, I'm ready for it. But at the same time, you know, I see that, hey, let's do this right. Let's do this right. Let's get that snowball effect. That snowball effect's going to be awesome. And then that use is going to show basically how the network can scale under with fees in place and then take that to IOTA mainnet. And now we're doing global mess, you know, corporate adoption kind of level type deals, which is, you know, currently what I believe is the vision. I could be totally wrong, but so I think, you know, the sentiment is that a little bit frustrated, but everything has shown positive all along the way, and we're looking forward. And one thing I think is for sure that is certain is it is gonna be sometime this year EVM goes live. That's just me being speculative, you know, being, you know, I could be totally wrong, but I would think it's this year for sure, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that. So I got two things. So the first thing from the developer community, you know, what's been really great, and I come from outside the IOTA ecosystem or IOTA community, and I've participated in a bunch of the different L1 and L2s at this point. And one of the cool things that I've seen that I've only seen on a couple of other L2s is the fact that our developer community is starting to come together as we've gotten closer to the mainnet launch. And there seems to be this collaborative effort of developers and teams that are trying to like figure out the solutions to what's happening on the network. And they're very communicative with our team and, you know, our team and the entire Touchpoint community, where they're actually doing this on a public forum. I mean, it's somewhat private because it's within this Touchpoint ecosystem, but at the same time, what's great to see is that even though there's competition amongst different applications and application teams, there's still this collaborative effort of trying to make sure that this product is launched in a way that works for everybody. And, you know, the only other place that I've seen that happen is the Arbitrum community, personally. And I think that is one of the reasons why they have kind of flourished in the way that they have, because, you know, project teams, they work together. And I think that one of the things that we have that's a little bit different is we kind of give projects, whether they're new to Web3 or just new to our ecosystem, a step into the door where, you know, they have the ability to just join a community that's actually willing to work together, even though they're also competing at the same time for whether it's market share of within our community or, you know, outside of it. It's just nice to have this, I guess, open collaborative community. And the second thing that I'll say is I think timing really matters. I know it's very difficult to find the balance between, hey, when are we going to launch and was this a good time to launch? And, you know, like the multi-chain and the Celsius conversation, I think, you know, nowadays, if we were to have launched 6 months ago, even if we had a good snowball effect or, you know, price increase somewhat, you're still relying on the overall market of crypto, and crypto hasn't done, you know, like exceptionally well relative to the last couple of years, in the last, you know, year or 2 years. I mean, I know recently we've seen a pretty big pump from the lows, but at the same time, I think that, you know, slow and steady kind of gives us the opportunity to make sure we launch and put ourselves in a position where things don't break. We have the opportunity, as JD said, to kind of kick off with this, you know, or just roll out with the complete snowball effect and not get shut down just by some minor instance or major event that happens because we didn't decide to take a good amount of time to make sure things were all shored up. So, you know, for me, I think that it's really important to like kind of zoom out and just remember that there is this connective tissue between our token and the wider ecosystem, including, you know, the Bitcoin and Ethereum price, because, you know, everything still does rely somewhat on this wider, or the larger ecosystem tokens. So I would really like encourage people to remember that timing is super important. And the longer we get into the bear market, as you know, as tough as it may be to see the price go down, if we launch at the correct time, or at least a better time, we'll have a better opportunity of doing well relative to other projects.
Great explanation. And I had one comment I wanted to make that Cappy had touched on, and I think Austin, you and JD did too, about the developer enthusiasm that's happening under the hood. And that's the sort of thing that is contagious. And, you know, there's a lot of like various networks that have different tech or superior. I mean, it's different, but it's not like superior necessarily, but really what separates them and makes them exciting and new and people want to build on it and like take the incentives out of it. A lot of it has to do with the enthusiasm of the community and the enthusiasm of the developers and the people that are like excited to be there. And that translates really, really well from just like a human perspective. And, you know, I know if you like, and this was new to me, you know, I started kicking around the IOTA Discord. I'm like, wow, man, there's some like really salty people in here. Like what's going on? Why isn't everyone super excited about this? And you know, I can kind of understand that it's been a long time coming, and like human nature says, let's get it out. Let's make people happy.
Uh-oh. Yeah. I think we lost Austin, but.
Okay. Jump in there, Mikey, co-host, take it over.
Dude, I am so ready for this. I don't want to try to assume what Austin was about to ask, but I've been thinking about this question for a little bit, or just since the space started anyways. I have a couple of friends in here that I've been preaching to about Shimmer's new EVM, which will hopefully be live soon. So we got some builders up here. We got some community members up here. What would you say to these guys that really have no clue about what IOTA is or what Shimmer is? What would you guys say to them? And like, why are you excited about this?
Well, I would say this, you know, coming from outside of this ecosystem and seeing so many different ecosystems pop up and try and replicate an EVM just the same way that every other ecosystem does it is, it's quite difficult to kind of stand out amongst the crowd. And I think some of the features that we have, whether it's like the no MEV, that's a huge one in my opinion for people that are more just getting into the space. You know, we don't have necessarily the biggest whales coming from the Ethereum ecosystem that are coming to really take advantage of less informed and I guess less experienced.
Welcome back, everybody, and I'll take this time real quick while we get the people back in here just to, you know, do us a favor, retweet this new and improved Twitter space, and also, like, feel free to jump up, man. If you're listening and you have an opinion, this is a safe space, guys, safe space, and we want to hear from you, too, so don't be afraid. Raise your hand. I'll bring you up.
It's not that safe. I wouldn't tell, it's too damn safe. You never know what'll happen in here.
No, I might, you know, I might crack jokes, you know.
While we wait, I'll continue what I was saying for the people that were here. So, you know, I mean, like what makes this stand out? What makes this a little bit different and why is it special? I mean, the reality of it to me is, you know, so many networks have these different, they've got the different names, but really the same products, right? And, you know, what we see in terms of networks that stand out is they've gone through and they've actually, I guess, focused down a specific vertical in the space. So I always use Arbitrum as the example because I think that they've done the best job at sort of carving out their market fit in crypto as a whole. And they act as this, it's really the cheap casino that people can play around with and speculate, whether it's through derivatives or options trading, whatever it may be. And, you know, that's, I think that it's a great example of what not what we're necessarily trying to do, but it's a good example of, you know, how it should be done. And the way that we kind of are trying to replicate what they've done, like I said before, is this idea of bringing a community of developers that has the ability to work together as opposed to just competing for market share. This is something that really does, in the end, stand out when you have the enthusiasm, like they said, about or from developers that are actually super excited to get into this new environment where, you know, you have the ability to kind of kickstart an ecosystem with a purpose. This is something that not everyone has. I mean, I'll look back at Canto. Canto had a ton of support from a lot of the DeFi, you know, the larger DeFi players, and Canto kind of, I mean, it died out immediately. And I think it's because while they had some great ideas and great products, there was really this idea of, you know, people were trying to extract value the entire time from the launch or from immediately following the launch. And so, you know, when we think about Shimmer EVM, the way that we try and do it from the inside, or at least from the ecosystem development side, is, you know, we want to bring in a community that's actually going to be excited from the get-go. And they're here because, you know, they're longtime members of the IOTA ecosystem. And, you know, what we already have is this very strong, large community that's going to have access to, you know, DeFi applications for the very first time. And it gives us a kind of great starting point where a lot of these other ecosystems, whether it's Aptos and Sui, you know, they have a ton of money to kind of dish out to their initial users. But the only thing that you're getting from that is people that are looking to dump on the community in order to kind of make that initial profit. And, you know, we're not playing the game like that. I think that our goal is to, first of all, ensure that we've got the infrastructure that we need to be a competitive EVM. But then beyond that is to kind of give people the opportunity to explore and then create different sorts of, or at least focus on different verticals in the space that we can, you know, really thrive upon. And I think one of the cool things that we're doing, and a lot of people are focused on this now, but, you know, we've actually got some good contenders here, is the gaming side of things. I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of Web3 first gaming, but I think that the idea of creating a gaming environment that's attractive to like real gamers and real users is the best way forward. The other thing that I would say is what makes us unique is this idea that, you know, oftentimes you see these copycat networks, and what we're trying to do is actually tackle things that real crypto users are going for, that they're going to use today and tomorrow. And I think a lot of other networks, a lot of other builders around the ecosystems don't necessarily focus on that. They're trying to find, they're either doing these copycats directly, or they're really reaching for these next huge things. And I think that, you know, the things that we can do is kind of take baby steps in terms of how to attract people from, you know, crypto as a whole, not necessarily trying to find people that have never participated in crypto, bring them on board, and that'll kind of create this opportunity for organic growth from, you know, both Web 2 and Web 3. So I think that the main point is that, you know, we're focusing on trying to do this organically, and we're not trying to, we're not giving people the opportunity to just extract value because they were early. It's more so, hey, you were early because you're, you know, a dedicated member of this community. And, you know, now you have the ability to kind of participate in a place that is, you know, I would say a collective of like-minded people. And I don't think you get that in every other ecosystem.
So I wanted to question for you, and I agree with what you were saying there. You brought up an interesting point about, you know, we know like Sui and Aptos, and I would even throw Polygon in there. You know, they minted their own token. They have big ass treasuries. And then when they launched their token came out with a lot of hype and like a shitload of value, right? And, you know, but so on the one hand, you've got terrible tokenomics on especially Sui, you know, Aptos over the years is just going to have a buttload of liquidity dropped on the market. And then you've got Shimmer, which has probably like the best token distribution I could probably imagine, right? So from a standpoint of like, look, hey, I want to buy the SMR token versus, you know, one of these other ecosystem tokens, like the distribution is insanely good. However, it comes at the cost of like, you know, the incentives that maybe the foundation can pony up, right? Obviously, there are incentives. There's the Tangle Treasury and there's other treasuries and grant programs and things that are out there. But that's also going to require the SMR token to have some, you know, price appreciation along the way. Like, what's your feeling on that, Austin and JD? Like, do you think that was the right move? You know, for as a token holder, I think it was the right move. But I'm interested to know, like, what y'all's feeling on that.
Well, from my perspective, I think that, you know, it is a very fair distribution of like the way that we have gone about it. I think that we were kind of tied in a, from my understanding, we were kind of tied in a little bit of a knot here where, you know, we've released pretty much all of the supply of both the IOTA token and then, you know, therefore the SMR token. But it does offer this fairness that you don't see in other ecosystems. I think, you know, what it comes down to for us is if we can showcase that our EVM is going to have activity from our community itself, then there is going to be money to come that comes in and flows in that will allow us to in turn increase the incentives that we start to or that we're able to offer. And I think that, you know, it's really important to find this balance of what's a great incentive for just being early and what's a great incentive for actually being an ongoing user. And the two examples I would use is Aptos versus Arbitrum, where with Aptos, you know, if you were early, you kind of knew about it, you were able to get in from, you know, a contact or however it works. And, you know, you would have the opportunity to get, you know, $10,000 in your airdrop, but that's not really necessarily good for the longevity of the protocol. And then, you know, in Arbitrum, there was always this idea of, oh, maybe there's an airdrop, but probably not. And after about a year and a half of the network being live, you finally saw people, or the Arbitrum Foundation was able to raise funds through the actual activity of the network and then outside investment. And they were able to distribute, in my opinion, a much more fair distribution of tokens than you see elsewhere. So from my perspective, I think that, you know, we have the opportunity to be a little bit more closely aligned to the way that Arbitrum did it, where, you know, if you're early and you participate at an ongoing, like for a long period of time or an extended period of time, then you'll have the opportunity to get the incentives if incentives are going to start flowing in. And it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, because if we have an active network, we will get outside investment from elsewhere and definitely from these much larger institutions and individual players from around crypto. So, you know, again, I think that it is very fair the way that we've done it. It's obviously more ideal if there are incentives to be given out from the get-go and ongoing, but it is, in my opinion, more attractive to be able to get in at the ground floor than it is to, you know, look at a network that's launched and the market cap on launch is, you know, $1 billion, $2 billion. That just is, it's very difficult for people to buy in at that point. So if we do showcase that we have an active community, an active EVM, and there is, if there is activity, then what that's going to do is tell people that are trying to be early for the first time or get involved that, you know, it's possible to make a lot of money here. And I know that's not always the end goal, but I think for a lot of people that is. And I like the fairness. I think that, you know, as soon as there's the opportunity to really ramp up incentives, we should do that. And I definitely push for that from the inside. But
All right, Austin, question for you. And like, this is the one I was, dude, I don't know when the space went down, but like, I was just talking away. I was just talking and, you know, and then all of a sudden all my friends were gone, which, you know, not the first time in my life that's happened. So, all right, Austin. So the bridge thing, we got to talk about the bridge thing, because this is like key on everyone's mind, especially for me, you know, having been like so deeply entrenched in the Phantom ecosystem. And I exited that actually couple months ago, and especially after like the first twinge of multi-chain drama, like it was just a complete exit on my end. But you know, getting the distribution of bridges done, you know, up front is huge. And obviously getting native, you know, USDT and USDC is like the end all be all, but it's not as easy. It's not, you know, it's easier said than done. Like, can you share who you guys are chatting with and like kind of what is the overall feeling and plan that you guys have for bridges? Do you have that information?
Yeah, I mean, I can give out, I can kind of hint at some things. I mean, I don't think I can say in full what we're definitely going to do, but I'll say this from the BD side, we've been in talks with a lot of the larger players, which would be, you know, people like Synapse, Axlar, Wormhole. And the idea behind it is, right now at least, you know, Synapse and Layer Zero, they kind of require liquidity pools to already exist on our network. So there needs, well, not, yeah, and like liquidity is needed. So Axelar and Wormhole are two that we're really interested in. I think that these are more well-known brands, and they've been around for a long time. You know, from my perspective, I'll just say this. So I was very reluctant to use multi-chain, and I was pretty outspoken about this like a couple months back. And the reason being is because back when they first launched as AnySwap, I had a real hard time trying to get to some of the newer networks through their router. And I think that, you know, for me, that was kind of a, that was the first red flag. And then, you know, you obviously had what happened a couple months ago where the CEO got like just disappeared off the face of the planet. And, you know, that was the second red flag. And then obviously the most recent one is, you know, these last two like hacks or exploits, they're still not even sure if they were done internally or someone else had hacked them. So, you know, the lack of clarity from multi-chain kind of made it clear to me that we needed to go with an alternative route. And I think that the whole IF at this point is very much on board with that. I mean, we're definitely not going to be using multi-chain. They're not even really working anymore. But yeah, so the big push that we have right now is, especially from my side of things and the rest of the Touchpoint team, is we're trying to integrate with just better and the more efficient and, you know, more trustworthy infrastructure partners. So for that really includes Oracle providers and bridges. And then obviously, as JD had said, we really need this multi-sig opportunity. So we have that. ServeRox is definitely the plan for that. And yeah, so when it comes back to bridges, though, I mean, we're in talks with a lot of the big ones. I think we're also in talks with one called Chainport. But the reality for me is that we really do want to, or we have to have this done before the EVM is live. And that is definitely the plan. So, you know, I mean, the talks are well on their way, and I'm hoping that in the next couple of weeks, we can make an actual announcement about one of them. But yeah, I mean, the idea is that we have to have one, and that is definitely going to be the case.
Let's take Axelar, for example, being like a, you know, quote unquote messaging protocol. They have their, I think they have the Squid router, if I'm not mistaken, but don't they require at some point to hold assets in escrow, kind of similar to multi-chain did, like the actual USDC needs to be held on the Ethereum side? Or do you know how that works? Like, can you speak to that? Are they different? Do they operate in a different way than multi-chain?
I think that it's slightly different. I don't want to get too into the technicals because I'm not necessarily certain on that. I think that from the conversations that I've had with our developers, it's Axelar seems to be a lot more secure, and the team is a lot more outspoken and I would say just transparent in terms of how things work and just in terms of the communication that they're willing to give with their partners. I'm not necessarily too sure how their router works relative to multi-chain, but from my experience with them and the conversations we've had with them, it's definitely more of a, it's definitely a better partner it's a better partnership that we could ever have with multi-chain. But yeah, I mean, I can definitely share some information on that, you know, in the Discord and whatnot, but for right now, I'll probably stay away from the technicals of it.
No worries. And, you know, probably like distribute, you know, it's a pain in the ass to have like AXL USDC and then like LZ USDC and different forms of USDC on the market. Like, it's definitely, there's just no question about it. It's a pain in the butt. However, distributing risk in that way is, you know, probably not the worst thing in the world until we can get to the point of, you know, being friendly enough with Circle or Ifinex or whoever to get, you know, actual native stables on chain. Right. And then of course you have the CDP, you know, the collateralized debt position stables that are minted natively on chain, but you still got to get the wrapped Bitcoin or the wrapped ETH over, you know what I mean? So even that, like at the end of the right. day, you're still reliant somewhere on something.
Yeah. Right. So the idea behind that, I think the conversation that I had with Chris, one of our teammates, is the fact that you know, even if we had multiple bridges, there will end up being one that becomes more favorable, whether it's on an application level or just on the, like, the entire network. And so, you know, what you'll see is that liquidity will kind of be drawn towards one specific bridge. And, you know, once that happens, we'll have a better idea of what the community prefers and what the protocols, what the actual applications themselves prefer. So, I mean, if there's a liquidity pool for, you know, SMR and, like you said, LZ, USDC or USDT, that may have way more of a share of the liquidity than, you know, an Axelar USDC and Shimmer pair. So that's the way that we look at it. It's more so that while there will be competition initially, one of these tokens will become the kind of the de facto bridged asset. And yeah, I mean, the ultimate goal is obviously to get, like, the native stable coins and onto our network. And that's, like, I think, to be honest, that's something that has to come later down the road, because if you look around, there's very few networks that Circle and Tether are actually doing that for. So we've definitely got to establish ourselves as one of these, like, big competitors to the larger ecosystems to actually get, like, really on their radar and to kind of get to the top of that list. But that is definitely the end goal.
Great. And as far as, you know, Wormhole is concerned, like, they're backed by, and for anyone that's new, you may not know Jump Crypto, but they're no small fish in the cryptocurrency space. And there was actually an exploit, I want to say probably years ago now, back on Solana, where somebody was able to mint a ton of wrapped ETH, like to the tune of 120,000 or something like that, and bridge it back out. And the Jump Crypto guys just, like, plugged the hole. They just, like, set 120,000 ETH and, like, plugged the hole to ensure that the wrapped ETH on Solana maintained its value. So, like, you know, they're pretty decent partners to get in bed with if you were to do so. And I've had the opportunity to chat with them quite a bit over the years, and they're the real deal. So cool. I love that you guys are kind of distributing the load in this way.
Yeah, 100%.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, like, the only thing that I would say is, you know, there's a difference between the way that Axelar kind of reacted to those hacks back in the day versus multi-chain, where they completely rebranded. And, you know, I think that I actually had hesitancy because of that Axelar hack on Solana way back then.
You mean Wormhole.
I'm sorry, Wormhole. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, the fact of the matter is, you know, they kind of stuck to their brand and they've reestablished themselves as a pretty strong partner that we're definitely open to conversing with, because, you know, in the end, the grand scheme of things is we're looking for someone that's trustworthy, that's not going to let us down. And to be in existence for, you know, this last couple of years, and to kind of show that, you know, they have the ability to build off of the mistakes that were made is really important. And yeah, I mean, that's the way that I look at it. So yeah, I mean, the bottom line for anyone else that just joined is we're definitely getting one of these, I would say, more established bridge partners onboarded, and that's going to happen as soon as possible. And, you know, it's one of the most important things that we're looking at right now.
Good deal. And JD, as a, you know, IOTA veteran yourself here, you've been at this for a long time. So correct me if I'm wrong, the Tangle Community Treasury is essentially, is it a year-long program that you guys are doing where you've got X amount to use a year to stimulate activity on the Shimmer EVM or Shimmer network?
Yeah, so, you know, a quick rundown on the Tangle Treasury is, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. We can hear you both.
Okay. Maybe Mikey, you could shoot
for us. Cool. For some reason, I don't hear JD. Go ahead. Let me know when he's done.
Okay.
Technical difficulties. Anyways, the Tangle Treasury basically started from when the community voted to use the 50 TI in the community. Now, of course, that's on the IOTA mainnet. And to have access to that from the community, we need smart contracts, which we need basically EVM. So then came the ShimmerNet. And, you know, just talking about, like, why should people be excited about Shimmer and, you know, and as a token distribution, you know, from a longtime holder, you know, I remember when two things kind of hit. Like, first, there was a release that, hey, we're going to do Shimmer testnet to, you know, basically you know, be able to test EVM and kind of do shimmer campaigns like what happened and find out the bugs to fix before going to IOTA mainnet, because, you know, IOTA mainnet potentially could be used by EBC or some of these large scale corporate adopted clients. And some are already using it. Some government in the Netherlands with the I forget what that token was called, but so it makes total sense to test that out before it goes to mainnet, because it's just too crucial to have any of those bugs come out. And at that time, Shimmer was going to just simply be a testnet. So like, hey, here you go, stake your IOTA, you get equivalent Shimmer, and go off with it. And then follow that up with Assembly, which Assembly was going to be basically an open, anyone can kind of be a validator, anyone can run a validator node, and anyone can earn incentives through that. And Assembly was going to be much more set up in a position where the IOTA Foundation is going to have a decent chunk. There's going to be a set of chunks, especially for validators. There's going to be a chunk set up for builders, right? There's this whole tokenomics kind of something that IOTA didn't have when it launched in 2016, when it was just a small group and, you know, this crazy vision of Ternary. And then on Shimmer, again, it was just, hey, everyone that has it, IOTA gets Shimmer. Okay, now Assembly is going to be the token that really kind of matches what other large-scale players kind of do in the crypto space. But what was awesome was, you know, and I always thought this, that, like, where there's tokens and there's builders and there's holders, there's going to be value. So Shimmer quickly turned from simply, hey, here's some tokens, let's just test this out, and we're not really putting too much effort into it, kind of became the degen platform. And now it's going to be DeFi. It's going to be the real kind of wild, extreme Web3 playground where, you know, I think IOTA mainnet's going to be just more for the corporate adoption. Now, being a holder from 2017, I'm just super excited because we got this awesome, you know, token distribution. Like, had that vision of this degen kind of crypto space, then yeah, probably IOTA Foundation would have kept a huge amount for themselves and et cetera. And I'll be honest, like, ideologically, I wasn't for the 20% increase originally, because I just didn't agree with minting, you know. But now seeing it and understanding that, like, all the tokens in the top 20 market cap basically have these massive war chest treasuries. Like, you cannot compete against them without something, right? So I'm really happy today that we did, you know, do this 20%. We do have the treasury. We have the growth committee and the TIA Tangle Economic Association. And we have these funds. So from what happened now, the community voted, okay, let's take these fundings and let's give it 30% to a committee, which is, you know, what I'm in charge of as a program lead, the Tangle Community Treasury. And it was about, I think, 1.6 million in April, and it's sitting after payouts now at about 900,000, and it's gone down, of course, because the price. But we are going to be running this for 1 year, so until March next year, and then the community will decide again, right? Because we still have something like 63 million left over in the community treasury of Shimmer tokens. And then we also have 50 TI IOTA. So the remaining community treasury, I can actually look it up right now while I talk about this. But the remaining, that even after this year, the community will manage, and we'll be doing that on level 2 EVM with Tally, just like all the other big players. That governance is actually being done on weekly discussions right now. But, you know, if the community says, hey, you know, manage this for another year, or maybe there'll be more DAOs, or maybe it will be done by community, etc. But so there's, what's this about? 63 million left over, which at today's price is $3,167,912. Now, that's aside from what we're managing right now at the Tangle Treasury. So come March, we can do, you know, access that again with a community vote. So let's say that snowball effect takes over. Let's say that EVM does a 10x. You know, I mean, who knows? Could Shimmer do 100x? It's been done before. We've seen this in bull markets. I mean, this is 3 million on a network that hasn't even launched yet. in the worst bear market possibly going on right now. So that 3 million could be 30 million. That could be 300 million. I think personally easily. The 50 TI, I think, is sitting at a value of about 10 million. And again, you know, worst bear market, you know, IOTA hasn't even seen EVM, Cordicide, you know, IOTA 2.0, you know, EBSI still needs to finish, et cetera. There's all these things that could possibly happen. So that 10 million could be 100 million. So is there a position to where we could see potentially massive war chest treasuries now like the other people in the 20 market cap? I think absolutely. And that's one thing that at least I hope that the community can make smart decisions to make sure that these treasuries aren't, you know, depleted before the bull market happens. It's tough because we need to spend to make it happen, but we also need to manage it that it's there for when the bull market happens or when EVM goes live and is successful, when, you know, IOTA 2.0 modules start coming out and, you know, who knows what's going to happen on IOTA mainnet, but we want to have enough in those treasuries that we can see 100 million treasuries, that we could have a war chest, and then we can just fund amazing things. So, you know, for right now, to answer the question, we're running basically lean. We'll see what happens after EVM launches and about, you know, the quarter after that. And then, you know, we'll be putting together things for March. And in the meantime, rather than looking at a long-term outlook and saying, oh, for sure, this is going to be a $100 million treasury, let's just spend, I want to look at it as we can only deal with what we have today. Today, we have minimal treasuries. And part of what we're doing is we want to seek, you know, other treasuries just give out money. Well, they've got $1 billion. We have literally 1.6 million. So like, just for example, we supported Sooniverse and their Build 5, but they gave us tokens back, right? We supported Audit One, they gave us tokens. We're going to support DeFi and pools, but we're actually going to get incentives from that back to us. So we want to replenish the treasury and help out at the same way. And the way I look at that is we kind of want to be in a way a VC lender, but with the best terms possible. And where other VC lenders might get a percentage of tokens, like Audit One's going to give us 0.5% of all their tokens, they would then, one, dump on the community, and then two, take all those profits and go on to the next community. They go out of this ecosystem. Instead, we're not going to dump on the holders because we are for the community. That is a set precedence, as well as if we do start selling and we start making gains, we're only going to fund more projects. We're only going to fund more projects. So all those profits are going to stay in the ecosystem and then create this circular effect. And for the projects themselves, we've had like really good response from them because they're like, wow, like you guys have this kind of good vision in this model to sense that, you know, if you make profits, you're going to fund more projects, which is going to bring more people, which is going to give them more customers. So it's just kind of this circular effect that grows it. And we're doing this at a 1 to 3 million. Next step is when our treasuries are 30 million to 100 million to just keep that going, keep that rolling. So, yeah. And Mikey, if you could just let Austin know, I'll pass it on to someone else.
Sorry, JD. So there's some Twitter space buggery going on, unfortunately. So I think I might have interrupted you for a little bit. So apologies for that. Yeah. But
No worries.
But no, really, until that last bit, really, really well said. You took us pretty much the whole life cycle from IOTA to Shimmer and to how now the TCT is going to be operating. And I think that was a lot of really good information, so I really appreciate it. Austin,
I did actually catch the end. So I got kind of the end from my personal account. I don't know what the hell's up with Spaces, man. I could not hear it through the BlockFlights account.
Are you listening on a desktop?
I threw it on my desktop on my personal account. But what I did catch was the end, and what an interesting concept of having a community treasury that kind of acts a little bit like a venture firm at the same time. So you're hyper focused not just on like funding projects, but also on continuing the treasury, man. And that is freaking rad. I love that. I absolutely love that.
100%. And would do cool. it. In a
I, do we? Just, what do we got, just, Mikey? What else do we have, my friend?
Well, did you want to talk about the, in terms of like topics that we can talk about? I think we should talk about the Firefly wallet being the mobile being deprecated. But also, like, I really want to bring up some there's this Austin guy sitting in front of a blue screen on the couch in the audience. He looks kind of like a loser. We could probably bring him up to talk. Oh, sorry,
dude.
Austin,
if that's you back to the I can't talk from my desktop though, bro. It won't let me talk from my desktop. You can bring it up all day long. It won't matter. Because I can't participate from my desktop. So my cell's being used on this one.
Just talk about the Firefly mobile wallet being deprecated and just kind of like focusing more on the desktop version. And other than that, though, I really want people to come up from the audience, people listening that have any opinions, any questions, any gripes, any concerns. If you have a question in the audience, raise your hand. I'll bring you up. In the meantime, Austin, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that was probably the last thing was deprecating the mobile wallet. But, I don't see that as kind of like a huge thing because, and again, I've never used the Firefly mobile personally. I only use the desktop. I don't do crypto on my cell phone. But I think a lot of, the feature-rich stuff that they want to put towards it really is kind of, desktop specific. So I don't see that as really being like a huge deal. I did have a couple people ask me like, is this a red flag? I'm like, well, not really, man. They're just kind of focusing their efforts where they need to be. And by the way, it's still out there if anyone wants to pick up the baton, and run with it from this point forward. So I guess
I would say it's definitely not a red flag. I think that it's kind of always been something that has been at least talked about between the team and the IF. I personally don't necessarily use my phone for any sort of crypto activity either, unless I'm like really speculating and with a tiny amount of money, because, security first is how I would put it after being in here for so many years. It's like the best way to do things is to move through a cold storage wallet, even if it's, you're trying to make some quick transactions. I mean, you see, whether you're holding it on exchange or, just on a hot wallet, you hit one link, you hit one wrong button, and, your funds are at risk. But again, like I really wouldn't consider the excavation as being any sort of a red flag whatsoever.
Yeah, and I'll add to that. I mean, we have...
Agreed. I agree with that. So cool. Well, listen, if nobody has any questions...
Austin, can you not hear JD speak? Still,
I cannot. Hold on. If he's speaking, I didn't know. Hold on. Go for it, JD. You're up, buddy.
I was just gonna say, like we have the TanglePay wallet and Garrett and his team, which represent the Asian community, and Garrett is one of the founders of Bit4X. I mean, extremely long term. Bit4X is a centralized exchange that makes, I think, hundreds of millions a year. And it's awesome because I think that's ultimately what an ecosystem wants to see, right? It wants to see, rather than the IOTA Foundation spending all their money and all their time building everything, they want to see really third parties and community builders come in and start building these applications that are integrated, like rather than them doing it. They should be focusing on the research. They should be focusing on the protocol. And really, that's it. And I think a lot of the community from 2016 has seen this, and some of the community builders has felt some frustration as, they've saw gaps and started building, and then it turned out the IOTA Foundation was building it in the end. But I think the IOTA Foundation, taking it from a community standpoint, has really seen and kind of done a lessons learned and kind of learned from the past to say, hey, we have these amazing builders. Why don't we put it out there? So I think it's actually a step in the right direction, deprecating that. And, the teams going private. And then we've also seen as well from the Treasury wallets coming in. And we archived one because we don't have the Treasury and we want to see EVM go live. But we are definitely probably supportive of that wallet. So I think getting a wallet, a mobile wallet that has a wallet, and this particular wallet had like potentially fiat to crypto purchase, and it integrates the DeFi and the NFTs and et cetera. And again, I think the main point is once that snowball effect takes off with the DeFi and the TVL rises and the people come, those applications and wallet providers won't even be looking for a grant at that point. They're just going to know, wow, we're going to get so many users. And, you know, they're going to charge a fee just like everyone else. I mean, this is an economy, whether it's digital Web 3 versus Web 2, but it's an economy at the end of the day. But once that TVL is there, that value basically that's in the network through the DeFi platforms that take off and that GameFi, et cetera, then people are going to want to come for free and say, hey, here's my wallet. I just took an integrated Shimmer EVM. I just took integrated Shimmer and IOTA, et cetera. So I really personally, I mean, honestly, just from a community member from 2016, 2017, I wish that the IO Foundation would just focus on the research, just focus on the protocol and the building. Don't mess with anything else. You know, of course, you can't do that overnight. And I think the actions are showing that they are going in that direction. So I see it as fully positive. And I look forward to seeing what the Firefly team and Charlie does. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be amazing things. I think they'll be able to operate better on their own. We've seen him, Pierce, go off from the identity. I just got an email from him. And even though we haven't been able to send him USDT due to, you know, without having that multi-sig, he's already said that Yella has already said they're 50% through with that identity building. So they're not stopped building. You know, they're just chugging along. And then we saw Matt Yarger, which was it? Do you remember what the name of that is? Austin from Touchpoint, Demio or something? I can't remember.
Demio.
Yeah. And so Matt Yarger is, you know, got connections to Dell and taking the Alvarium project to a fully privatized level. I mean, these are great things that, you know, and yeah. Then he's actually taking on Streams, where IOTA Foundation kind of almost deprecated Streams. Matt Yarger is taking it with their company. So now they're going to build Streams, because that was the big kind of question is, once Shimmer EVM goes live and IOTA 2.0, what happens to Streams? Well, Streams is, if we remember, is about protecting data when it's passed across so we can get verifiable data. And we kind of thought, oh man, that vision's completely lost. Like, it's, you know, not going to be managed. It's deprecated. But wait, you know, there's still value there. And that's being taken over from a private company. Like, identity, again, how's that going to work for IOTA 2.0? Taken over from a private company. You know, wallet, how's that going to work? Taken over from a private company. So I think these are not only we're seeing what was discussed a year ago, but it's actually happening now and happening in a positive way. So I think it's a positive thing all around.
Boom. Absolutely, exactly. The Matt Yager, the Dremia was a spinoff, you know. And so I think that's what we're going to see more of, and that's a good thing. Austin, are you here?
I am back. Yeah, sorry, man. So there's like a 3-second lag when I do it on desktop. So I'm throwing an AirPod in and then taking it out once JD stops talking. I had no idea that. Garrett was one of the founders of Bitforex. We had a call with him like, I don't know, a week or two ago. And I've been using Bitforex because being in the States, you know, you're kind of limited as to how you can accumulate shimmy. So good, good, good. All right. I completely agree with everyone's sentiment on the mobile wallet. I think it's a non-issue personally. What else we got, Mikey?
Well, really quickly, I just want to thank our – I'm not saying we're done or anything, but I just want to thank again, you know, like JD and Austin – coming after the after Austin rugged us, you know.
I did. It was a straight rug. Sorry.
But also, I want to shout out a couple. My friend Tabasco's in here right now. He works at Chainstack and Oracle. So good to see you in here, buddy. He's probably not listening, but you know, whatever. It's cool. And then also, have the Block Bytes fam in here. John Steps, Aaron's Ghost, Wally was in here earlier. Love you guys, and of course all the IOTA fam, IOTA Nodes in here, IOTA Insider. It's really cool having you all here. And if you guys have anything to say, JW's here. Anything to say, come on up.
Yep. And I do think for, you know, today, if nobody has anything they want to jump in on, we could probably wrap it up. We'll do this again next week. I will not put my phone on my internet. I'll just let, you know, Verizon run the space for us for a little while. So hopefully we don't get rugged. I apologize. Starlink. Yeah, well, maybe I should get a Starlink. That's right. That's a good idea. But yeah, so next week we'll have an easier time. But listen, if you're from the community, please come rap with us. You know, even if you've never said a word, like, come chill with us, man. That's really the whole point of this, is we just want something consistent where people can come. And there's just something different about hearing people's voices as opposed to a message in a Discord server. There's just a lot more to it. It adds a human element, man. And at the end of the day, like, if we're going to make this thing successful, we've got to pepper in that human element. It's just going to be crucial moving forward. So, Mikey nailed it. JD, dude, I did for like the 10 seconds of each thing you said that I caught, man, it was off the chain. It was excellent. Excellent. Yeah. So thank you so much. Austin, appreciate you being here, man. You guys are amazing. Cappy and Drac, we lost, unfortunately, but.
Yeah. Well, let's round it out real quick. We got 2 minutes till 1:30. So I do have one question. This is a question I'd love to ask on Twitter Spaces when I'm up here. So real quick, and this is the human element, right? So Austin, JD, Austin, pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Definitely not.
What the hell is wrong with you? What the...
JD, back me up.
I kind of like it, actually. My wife, it's kind of the only thing she will order is a pepperoni and pineapple pizza. It's, I want to stay happily married. Gabby, I got to get on board with it. So it's okay. It's all right.
Pizza, yeah, I'll eat anything.
That's right.
I'll die on the hill. But yeah, but that's something I just wanted to ask. I love asking that question on Twitter Space.
Hey, I just want to give a shout out to the IOTA crew that's coming, and I just want to say thanks for coming. And I think as EVM gets closer, like, you know, Austin's right. Like, we've been here for years, and
should we wrap it up?
I always used to think of what can we do, even though, you know, we're not devs or we're not working for the treasury or we're not doing governance or we're not doing anything, and simply coming, even if we're not speaking, and just showing numbers here is amazing. I think we had 99 before Austin rugged us before, and the more we can get that up, the better. And you know, even on top of that, if anyone just wants to jump in and make some comments, it makes it all the better. So you know, we really appreciate it. And you know, if we want to compete with the other top 20, you know, that's where we have to show our communities there. You know, even just coming here and showing presence, that's where it's at. And supporting all the other YouTube content creators out there that do stuff, and you know, hit the likes, hit the retweets. I mean, we've been doing that for years, and we get kind of bored and we get tired and we get you know pissed off about soon, but I mean, we can see that the action is there. We can see that it was fun on the Shimmers campaign. Like, it is real, it is gonna happen, it is gonna be sometime in the horrible word you say soon, but this is it. Like, this is our time finally. So really appreciate you guys coming, and let's keep it up.
Yeah, JD, I would follow you into battle.
I'll just add, you know, thanks for coming out. I appreciate all you guys. You know, the one thing is, if you ever have questions or want to reach out, I do a lot of the BD for our foundation at this point, and you know, I run the developer support program, Touchpoint, and you know, if you ever want to just shoot the shit or have some input that you want to give us, just please feel free to reach out to me on Twitter or even Discord, and I will be there.
Awesome. All right, JD, I did catch the end of what you said there, buddy. And I'm sorry. Hopefully next time this doesn't happen like this. All right, ladies and gents, thank you so much for being here. We're gonna wrap it up.